kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Another reviews episode lined up. We were supposed to have an interview, but things kind of fell apart. So instead, Jacob Garner's here.
Yay.
Yay. How's it going?
Not too bad. How about you?
It's going. Since I don't have an interview this episode, you could be the interview.
Oh, no. Okay. What are you going to interview me about?
What are you here to talk about today? What's your latest project?
Well, I've got two games I'm supposed to be reviewing on this one. Is that the project you're referring to?
Not at all. I'm just trying to make conversation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you dipshit. What the hell? We're friends. You're supposed to know that I'm just trying to have conversation with you.
Okay. Well, I mean, like, I could talk about what else I'm playing other than, you know, the stuff I was reviewing.
I don't know if I care that much.
Man, well,
what have you been playing? What are you enjoying that's not review related? What is in the Jacob Garner playlist right now?
Well, first off, I'm still playing Super Mega Baseball 2, even though we reviewed that like 3 months ago.
It's been a while, but that is just such a goddamn good game that I don't blame you for it.
It really is. I'm trying to get the last of the achievements that like don't cause, like, you know, I don't have to have, like, you know, 99 ego going or I think the only other weird one is, oh, I have to hit 4 home runs in a row, which I'm just like, yeah, it's not happening.
I hate that achievement so much.
You what?
I hate that achievement so much because I've gotten close.
I've gotten 3 in a row. And then inevitably my catcher or my pitcher is the next one up. Of course.
It's just like a ground out to second.
It's a pinch hit. I didn't even like try to do a pinch hit. but currently what I'm doing is I'm playing on regular season mode. So most of the time I'm annihilating the other teams as per usual because I still have it set to 0. But the regular thing, God, I thought was kind of interesting. Yeah, but I thought I was actually going to lose one. Even though I was holding them to 0 the whole time, I struggled to make it to make it 11-0. It was just like, their pitcher just kept whatever it was, is like their pitcher, was on point the whole entire time. Anything I hit, was just going straight to the center fielder, and it was just a mess of a game. And meanwhile, most of my infield was doing a lot of navel gazing the whole time. And so like I kept getting base runners, and thankfully my pitcher was able to, eventually strike out 3 people before anybody was able to score. But that was actually like the worst game I've played so far on that.
I want to reiterate to our listeners that you are playing on the absolute easiest difficulty.
So,
and still struggling.
Hey, no, it was against that one team I was struggling. Normally, like, I crush my opponents. Like, it's usually like 35-0. I think the best I've ever done was like 80-0.
Yeah, you got to bump up that ego rating.
I know, but let me get my achievements first.
Bump it to default. At least go to 15.
Again, after I get my achievements, because I have to make it I have to make sure that they win the championship. After that, you know, we'll start messing with other stuff.
Oh, good God. What are we going to do with you?
I don't know. Make fun of me every single time I talk about Super Mega Baseball 2.
Deal.
You know, there's that. And of course, you know, my favorite pastime within the game is hitting pitchers.
Of course.
Which, like, that's actually, like, because I like streaming on Mixer. For whatever, even though I get, like, I think I've been streaming pretty regularly for about 4 or 5 months now, and I've had a total of 16 people stop in to watch what I'm doing.
And 15 of them were me.
I think 13, but yeah, because I had one guy randomly pop in, on a super mega baseball game that I was playing, and he was just like, why don't you bump up the ego? And I'm explaining, like, you know, oh, well, you know, I just play this game to relax, and, you know, I just enjoy crushing the other team. And he left.
Wait, do you actually talk with people now?
Well, yeah, because you got me that headset, remember? It works.
Wow. Look at you.
Yeah. I mean, it kills the hell out of my batteries, but, you know.
Getting all fancy and shit.
I know. If you guys ever wanted to stream on Mixer and play together, you know, we could.
I got to stay on Twitch.
But are you going to? I mean, with the changes that they made?
I mean, I could still stay on there and hate them for their changes.
Okay, but you still make money from that.
Yeah, quote, make money.
You get free games?
Not from Twitch. Oh, wait, yeah, from with their stupid...
Which you have Twitch to pay for Prime anyway.
Program. And you have to use their own PC application to run them and fucking whatever.
Wait, so then why are you on Twitch then?
Because I'm an affiliate and I have the potential to make money eventually. And I can't do that on Mixer.
Oh, Mixer doesn't have any kind of affiliate thing?
Oh, nowhere near what I would qualify for.
Okay.
Yeah. So instead, I will just stay on Twitch's awful service
and hope one day you make 5 cents
with their dwindling benefits. Yeah, we should probably mention this briefly. I'm sure we'll talk about it more on the next episode when news actually happens. But the day we're recording this, it came out that Twitch is getting rid of their ad-free viewing with Twitch Prime.
Which is crap.
The whole fucking point. So I'm going to take this opportunity to say, if you're watching us on Twitch ever, use Adblock, because I don't care. I give zero fucks.
Woo!
Those 3 pennies that I would have got by you watching an ad, oh well, I'll live without them.
Don't worry, I'll throw pennies at your head next time I see you.
Yeah, I know you will. Anyway, we should probably talk about games, huh?
Yeah, I mean, like, wait, games that I'm playing right now or the games that I'm, like, reviewing?
The ones you reviewed.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, you're so boring you me, peasant.
You're such a dick king. You realize that? You're the worst. I hope you get dysentery.
What year is this? Is this the Oregon Trail that you're cosplaying
as
now?
Yes, because, you know, dysentery didn't exist till the 1840s when people went out to Oregon.
No, it didn't exist until the 1980s when the Oregon Trail came out.
On, you know, on Apple IIe.
Yes.
God bless Mac.
Anyway, we do have games to talk about. The first one that we're going to talk about tonight is called F1 2018, developed and published by Codemasters. It's releasing August 24th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $59.99. Make headlines in F1 2018. F1 2018 is the official video game of the 2018 FIA Formula One World Championship. The new game immerses players into the world of Formula One more than ever before. Jacob, tell us about it.
All right. Have you ever seen the 1966 movie Grand Prix starring James Garner? All right. Stop what you're doing. Watch at least the first 20 minutes and just be like, holy shit, this is some amazing, like, car racing footage that, like, Fast and the Furious could never hope to do. And it's, like, the stuff that the movies, like, Russian Speed Racer obviously pulled stuff from. But it's all about, like, F1 Grand Prix racing, and it's just, holy shit, you gotta see this. That was, like, my first foray into it, and then I started playing this game, you know. And the thing is that, holy crap, this is a lot more than I was expecting, because I'm so used to playing games like Burnout. I've dabbled into Forza, and I was like a really big fan of the Dual Test Drive 2 when I was a kid. You know, if we're going to talk about, you know, old ass games. But, you know, I've been playing racing games for most of my life, but it's mostly been arcade stuff.
Yeah, this ain't no arcade game.
Yeah, this is no arcade game. This is super realistic, and you have to, like, you can't play it like an arcade game. You have to adapt to the style of Formula One racing. Otherwise, you're just going to be all over the track. You're going to wreck your car. You're never actually going to make a lap, because you'll keep hopping off of the track, which they penalize you for, and then tell you, by the way, this lap doesn't count, and also you're being penalized on the next lap. And there was one track that, like, I just kept racking up all these penalties, and I had no idea when a track, like, when, you know, one complete circuit would actually count.
Some say he's still racing to this very day.
I ended up having to quit just because I've eventually did like five laps and none of them counted. And I'm just like, you know what? Screw this. Like, I'll have to restart this, which I did. And the thing is that you have to be really good at knowing when to brake, knowing when to hit the gas, you know, being able to manage tight corners and stuff like that. The game is all about precision. And it's just it when they say that, like, when in the game's description it says it immerses you into it, it really fucking does. Like, I don't want to use that kind of language with this show because I'm pretty sure that we actually use stronger stuff, but, you know, like, I'm sure Codemasters is going to listen to this, but holy crap, you, like, it really immerses you into it. It puts you in a first person mode. Like, it has all these different heads-up displays that you have to review, like, you know, and you get to do all this customization with your car. Like, you know, do you want the airfoil down? Do you want to point it up? Like, what kind of tires do you want to use? Like, all this, like, it's really heavy. And I'll be honest, if you're not familiar with this kind of stuff, it's really overwhelming at first. But the game does walk you through it. There's some interesting RPG elements to it with skill trees. Where you can have certain, like, as you do well, you can, like, accumulate points and you can use these points. Well, it's really money, but whatever, you know, get these skills, like, you know, it'll take you like 50% less time to manufacture this piece, or, you know, you can increase, like, your airflow by like 0.5%. Which may not sound like much, but this is a game where seconds count, and not even like seconds, it's milliseconds.
Yeah.
And it's just, I was just blown away by everything in it. Now there is like a career mode that, that the game does, you know, suggest that you play and you get to create your guy and, you know, the usual standard stuff. There's a storyline, and of course, like, how you react to certain things, you know, is how other racers will view you, you know, how your teammates will, you know, either work with you or just be like, whatever. You actually get to choose who you're going to race with, like what team. And fun thing, you actually get achievement points for that. And what you can do is you can actually back out, choose a different team, get new achievement points, back out.
And- oh, you dick.
Yeah, because I was just like, oh, I don't know if I really want to race with Ferrari. Maybe I want somebody low, like, you know, lower on this, like, you know, a team that's more laid back and, you know, just cares as long as you get points, like, who cares? And then, like, you know, up popped another achievement thing. And I'm like, I'm going to go back and get everybody else now. Then so you start going through your career thing, and it's just like, you know, you have to, like, do all these kind of races, and, like, your company will give you all these tips, and you have, like, a crew chief, like, who will work with you and stuff like that. There's just a lot to it. I did try multiplayer, but however, because this was pre-release, nobody was online, so I have no idea how it plays. But, you know, I'm assuming that one, like, is the game out already at this point?
As of us recording this, it is still a couple of days away. It comes out on the 24th.
Okay. I'm assuming, like, once the 24th rolls around, you know, there will be, you know, plenty of people online to play with, and it'll be great.
Yeah. And if their past games are any indication, it had really solid online play. So I'm not concerned at all.
Okay, cool.
I trust Codemasters when it comes to online play.
Nice. And then the other thing that was that's worth talking about is that, like, of course, you don't have to do the career mode. You can also just do, you know, you can just, it allows you to just jump into a track. And then on top of it, you get to race with all these different classic cars, some of them going as far back as the 1970s for F1 racing and stuff. And And then you can just take it around the track and just see how this one would handle, or and how crappy you actually are, you know, at Formula One racing. And I'll be honest, the game is very daunting. There's a lot to it if you're not familiar with it, but holy crap, this thing is insanely well done. I had a lot of fun once I started figuring out, like, you know, how to actually stay on the track and, you know, not get penalized every 5 seconds or you know, destroy my car. But once I figured all that stuff out, I was having a blast with this game. So, yeah.
Nice. So the $60 price tag on it, what's your official verdict?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have never felt this strongly.
I didn't even get to finish asking you. Holy shit.
Yeah, I've never felt so, like, this is one I would slam the $60 down for. Like, this is, it's easily one of the top five games I've reviewed for this podcast.
Wow, that's high praise.
Yeah, like, this is the real fucking deal. Like, this is a great game. I don't know if it's getting, is it getting a physical release here in the U.S.? Or is
I'm
it just
pretty
digital?
Sure it is, yeah. It usually okay. does.
However you get to pick it up, whatever. Like, but holy crap, it's easily worth the $60 that you're paying for.
Has it converted you to a sim racing fan?
I could get used to this kind of stuff. I mean, I still really prefer my arcade stuff, but I do like the fact that it challenged me a lot. And this is speaking for somebody who, like, I usually just use video games to relax. And most of the time when I play video games, I'm just there for the story, and stuff, but I do like the challenges it was presenting me for it. It does walk you through, it does hold your hand a little bit. However, there also is at the same time, there is a steep curve to it. So if you're willing to put in the time, which really shouldn't take you that long because you have, you know, it's get good, you know, you have to. like you really have to with this game. And so, yeah, it's a good challenge. It looks beautiful, by the way. You know, it looks fantastic on my flat screen. I can't imagine what it looks like on yours. Like, it's got to look gorgeous.
Well, next time you come visit, we'll have to fire it up.
Yeah, definitely. So
good stuff. You have one other game to talk about. That is called Airships Conquer the Skies. Developed and published by David Stark, it released out of early access August 16th for $14.99 on Steam. Designed steampunk pixel airships out of functional modules and conquer the skies. Jacob, tell us about this one.
Okay, so pretty much it is, I mean, it's an interesting game. There's not much to it graphically, but it reminded me a lot of like the setup for FTL Faster Than Light. I don't know if you played that at all.
Okay. Everyone tells me about the game and everyone tells me I really need to play it. And I just, it's not on console.
Damn it, Joe, for the love of God, you can get it for like $5 on Steam. Just get yourself a gamepad like the rest of us.
Listen, you,
fair. all right, so it has a setup kind of like FTL, if it gives you an idea, but pretty much what you do is that you're building an like a steampunk airship, and you can fill it up with different stuff, and the game will tell you like how you need to set how to set up stuff. Like, you know, like you should put your weapons here. If you put something next to something, you know, is it going to explode? Or if, you know, if you put something here, how much damage is it going to cause when it explodes? that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like a real-time strategy game with actual sim parts to it. Does that make sense? Like, not mm-hmm. time management sim, but just, you know, you just get to build. and so it's a big sandbox, pretty much. And if you just want to make your own ships and just tinker with the game, like there's all sorts of weapons you can add on. Like you can add cannons, you can add rifles. There's like I even saw like this like whip thing that just like it whips at other airships, which I thought was kind of weird. You know, there's all sorts of different, you know, you can arm it with different stuff. You can, like, you know, how's it going to be powered? You know, what's it going to be powered with? You can tinker with these airships as much as you want, and that's a lot of fun. You know, if that's the kind of thing that you're into and you've got the time to burn on it. But the real fun is to send it out and, like, have simmed battles and stuff like that. And of course you can control the battles yourself if you want to, but, you know, part of the fun is just, you know, letting it fly, and just watching, you know, all your hard work go up in flames. So you can do that. There's a lot of tinkering with it if you want to. On the other hand, if you don't want to and you just want to jump in the game, like, it, the game actually comes with a number of preset airships that you can just, you know, pick up and go with. And there is a decent community on Steam that, you know, people are building their own airships and sharing designs. Like there's mods that they're sharing, all sorts of stuff. So I think that's really neat that, like, there's already that kind of community right out of the gate for it.
The beauties of early access, I guess, builds up that community.
Right. And it also helps the fact that the developer, he responds to just about everything. Like, I don't know how he finds time to, like, actually work on the game, because if you go through, like, if you go up on the Steam message boards, like, he's responding all the time. Between that, and also, like, if you go through, like, the negative Steam reviews, like, he's trying to help the people who left negative reviews. Like, he's trying to find out what went wrong. Can he make it better? Is there something actually wrong with the game? All that kind of stuff. So it actually helps too that the developer is very receptive and friendly with just about everything. So
it actually, that speaks to me more than anything else, is when a developer is that invested in their own game that they're always working to make it better and they're listening to every bit of feedback, positive and negative.
Yeah. And because that was actually, and that's actually one of the nice things about it, because that's actually going to lead into one of my complaints in a bit. In actually like 5 seconds. So, you know, if you don't if you actually want to do other stuff in there, there is like a campaign mode in the game. And the game just creates this map, and there's all sorts of stuff that you can, there's all these different lands that you have to conquer. And, not only do these lands have like their own airships, but like it's really thorough. And I don't want to say like, the adjective that comes to mind is convoluted, because I wasn't expecting this much, but like all the countries have, like, they have cities and they have towns and they have, and like they have defenses, not only in the air, but also on the ground. And like, you have to conquer both of them. And you can actually send spies to town so then they can like report back to you as, oh, this is what they're developing. This is what they have. All this other kind of stuff. Like, it's a lot more than it's a lot more than I would have expected for a game like this.
Wow.
And so you can build up your airship and, you know, go through the map and stuff like that. And the campaign mode is pretty fun. My only complaint with it though, is that it's real easy to just steamroll, through the entire map. And granted, that was uneasy, but I was steamrolling it through. Crud! What's the next level? I think it was called intermediate. Like, that seems right. But you know, it was pretty much just like I was steamrolling it through. And there's actually sometimes in the battles where, like, the country will just be like, "I'm not dealing with you," and they'll just like straight up surrender. And so that's kind of like a bummer with the game. And then other times. One of the problems with the game, that the developer is actually trying to fix right now, and it's supposed to get fixed soon. I haven't downloaded the latest update, so maybe it's already fixed. But the game, it was just like the enemies would just keep sending over and over, like the same exact kind of forces. And it's just like, it stopped being fun for that. But the developer said that that's actually a glitch right now. The AI is actually supposed to reassess after every loss. And then, so it's supposed to like, it should have sent out like a stronger or a different setup and stuff like that. So, but the developer said that should be fixed with the next update. So you know, again, he's always working on this thing.
Which is awesome. So I got to know, 15 right. bucks on it. What do you think of it?
15 bucks. Well, wait, I don't think it's 15. I thought it was 12.
It's on sale.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Sales happen 15, on Steam.
50, shut up.
Actually, by the time this releases, people do have another day or so to get it on sale for $11.99. The normal price is $14.99, on sale for $11.99 until the 23rd. So up on that if you're interested.
Definitely at the sale price. And for 15 bucks, I would too. But the thing is that you have to be into these kind of games. This does not look like, you know, it's not the most graphically beautiful game of all time, but they, you know, it looks well enough and the system is challenging and complicated enough that there's plenty of customization. There's lots of tinkering to be done, you know, so if you're into that kind of stuff with your video games, by all means, like, this thing's a ball. I had fun with it. I'd recommend it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, Jacob, it is always good having you on chatting for a bit. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up with those two games?
Not much. Just curious what the next thing to review is.
My balls.
Well, that'll be done real quick. They're tiny and hairy. That's about it.
10 out of 10.
Would recommend.
All right, moving on from one brand of crazy to another. Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you doing?
It's been a wild day. We've had some crazy we had some White House prosecutions. We've got me revisiting the Vita, drinking bubbly water, and it's raining. Big shock there.
I'm most intrigued by revisiting the Vita. What has you playing the Vita again?
For some reason on like the internet, I saw someone reference like licking blood for some reason, and it threw me off. And realized they were talking about a game I had on my shelf that I never played called Mary Skelter Nightmares. Mm. So I was like, I wonder how that game works. So I dabbled with it a little bit during lunch break today. And I'm looking forward to it. This is an Idea Factory game, but I like the atmosphere and the mechanics more than most Idea Factory games I've played in recent years. So it's interesting to me. It's a dungeon crawler. Big surprise there, right? But all of the characters are like themed after like fairy tale characters. So like your character, you're using Alice and Red Riding Hood in battle. And I think I'm about to get Thumbelina as a playable character. And I'm wondering if the story's going to somehow tie into like this being themed after like a fairy tale. But otherwise, it's just this really weird game where you lick blood for power and then lose your marbles and everything's related to blood in this game. But it's good. Like it's goofy as shit, but I like it.
Well, we're not covering it on the show, but I feel you talked about it, so I got to ask, what's your verdict on it so far?
Oh, it's a buy it, man. And it'd be nice if this is one of those games that end up making that jump to the Switch, because even though I love my Vita to death, the writing's already been set up. Sony's letting it go. So it's like, well, if there's no Vita, what's next? And the obvious is the Switch. It's not as good as the Vita in some ways, but it is better in others. So it's not a slouch. And it'd be nice if this line of games ended up making its way there, which I'm hoping is going to be the case going forward. Like, all these weird, hokey PS Vita RPGs that Idea Factory and NIST was putting out are going to all move to the Switch now.
NIST has been supporting the Switch quite a bit, so I wouldn't be shocked to see all the newer stuff show up there.
Well, they do that, I'm on board. I'm ready.
Good stuff. But speaking of the Switch, you got some games on the Switch to talk about today.
Wait, I do? No.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes, you do.
Let me go dig in this box. I got to find them. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, the first one isn't just on the Switch. It's on all platforms. But first game to talk about is called All-Star Fruit Racing, developed by 3D Clouds IT, published by P-Cube, released August 21st on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $39.99. Also available on Steam for $29.99. Go bananas for a jaw-dropping, lightning-fast kart racer for all ages and abilities. Pernell, what is this game?
It is a very weird racer. So, actually, it's not really weird. I'm not going to go nuts, but it is weirdly themed. So, the idea is that this is a kart racer through and through. But instead of using, you know, a staple of series-loved characters like Mario characters and Sonic characters, these guys decided, and honestly, wisely so, We don't want to pay for a bunch of licensed characters across franchises. This isn't a Cartoon Network-a-thon here. So we're just going to make up our own characters. And the theme they went with was fruit. Everything's fruit. The cars are made of fruit. The islands are made of fruit. Your weapons are somehow constructed of fruit. But I'll get to that. So the idea behind this is a pretty basic options scenario for a game. You have a kart race where you can do like a career mode, time attacks, and like quick championships, which would be like, you know, choose four tracks and then play on them or whatnot. And of course, the traditional verses. Character selection is composed of, honestly, a lot of characters. I didn't even do a full count, but glimpsing at it, there was at least 20 characters in the game that you could use. So you might be thinking, oh my God, that's awesome. That's a lot, but there's a mixed bag there. There are 20 different avatars, but there's not a lot of personality to these avatars. They all look different, more or less, though some of them use a similar model, but the cars all drive the same. The thing that makes all the characters unique is a specific mega attack that they get, which I'll explain also further in the review. So as you are playing this game, the typical method of which you're going to play is the career mode, which is a number of trophy cups. Think like how Mario Kart works. And each trophy cup consists of four races, each race running between like 3 to 5 laps. And if you can get high rank across all four, you will get the cup and most likely an unlock, depending on how well you placed. But racing is actually kind of fun. I enjoyed the racing in this game. So you pretty much hit gas to accelerate. There, I didn't catch any sort of like, you know, quick start boost like you can in other games, but you hit gas to go. And drifting in this game works in the manner of holding the one button, the whole one trigger to drift while you're turning into it, and then letting go when you get out of the turn, but making sure not to drift too long, otherwise you'll spin out. And once you stop drifting, you then hit the horn to get a quick acceleration. So you kind of can like hold on to it for a little bit and go from there. It's an interesting little mechanic I like, though. Some of those horns sound really terrible, so make sure you pick a good one if you're going to potentially attempt to use a lot of drifting in the game. Now, weaponry. Weaponry is where this game is very much unique from a traditional kart racer. So the way this game does it is there are four fruits. I might be getting one wrong, but there's like cherries, grapes, melons, and like strawberries. And what ends up happening is that you can charge them up. You basically drive over the track and there's like item pickups on the ground. And there might be like bubbles with the different fruits in them. And as you collect the different fruit, it will fill up juicers on the right-hand side of the screen. It's four circles all connected to one giant center circle. And each time you fill up a juice container, you'll unlock a specific upgrade attack. But depending on which combination of fruits you fill up, you'll get different attacks. So you might fill up, say, the grapes and the melons, which will give you like a tornado attack, which you throw out in front of you to hit guys. And if you get all four filled up together, you get your unlockable mega attack, which is what I was saying before, the attack exclusive to your selected avatar character. So now, if you get to the point where you're actually able to finesse this pretty well, you can always unlessly close off some of the juice cans. So let's say you fill up all four, which means you'll have your mega attack, but you don't want to use the mega attack. You want to use something below that. You can disconnect one of the juice containers and only use the ones that are filled up. So you can pretty much customize as you see fit. The downside to this cool system, however, is that you have to actually know about the system and understand it. If you can't understand it, well, you're going to be doing what I was doing for a lot of the game, which is just getting lucky. You find yourself going, hey, I got a bunch of fruit. Shoot, someone's coming up behind me. Whatever I got, I'm going to shoot it. And then you will shoot it. So it's interesting that you might say, Pernell, are you complaining about that? And in a way, I might be, only because, again, it's hard to plan unless you play the game enough to really get accustomed to and used to what you can get with different combinations of fruit. But what I find hysterical, even with that in mind, is that considering that this is pretty much the game's main unique factor, they don't even use that in every race. Some races are traditional, where you pick up an item, and the item is an attack or a defense move or something, just like any other race kart racing game. So they introduced this cool juicing mechanic, but some races just don't have it. Now, I get if you want to turn it off for, like, say, like versus mode with friends or something, but I kind of feel weird about them actually just making you use both types of attack structures in championship mode races. But that's neither here nor there, I guess. That's just how I personally feel about it. So it's hard to say how I feel about the game because on one hand, it is a competent racing game. It's not a bad game. I enjoyed what I played of it. On the other hand, there are some oddities to it. Even though there's a lot of different characters you can use, they don't feel very personalized. And what I mean by that is if you say, for example, I know this is a op comparison, but I'm going to have to because it's in the same genre. You look at Mario Kart. If you're racing against Toad and Peach and Donkey Kong, you know who they are. And when they drive past you, you will know who drove past you. You will know who you hate on the course. In this game, you've got, I don't know, just naming a few random names like Coco, you know, well, Jennifer and Melonhead and like and Ashley, Melonhead. You know. So you have these random characters with random names, but don't get me wrong, that's not so much the bad thing, is the fact that in addition to having these random names and just a bunch of random avatars, their voices aren't even unique. Like you don't hear like, you know, if Melonhead drives past me, I don't hear ho ho, nuts up or something like that, or gonna bowl you over. Nothing cool like that. It's just ha 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 ha, like just generic voices which are used on multiple characters. In fact, it's wondering if they even are used on multiple characters, and if it's not instead just generic sounds that just play over the track because they don't feel like they're coming from anybody in particular. It's just random laughter.
I would love to have a racing game where it's your voice just yelling "nuts up" as you drive.
Nuts up. Gonna bowl you over.
Oh Lord.
So what we need now is a friend to come up with their own kart racing game and get us all into it as characters and voices.
That'd be amazing.
Because I already have a whole slew of lines for that bad boy. And another worth mentioning also about the whole thing about used characters and avatars. So I've seen multiple characters win first place in races. Every time there's an end of a race, there will be a first, second, third podium scenario that takes place, you know the deal. And I've seen multiple characters use the same animation for first place, which is playing air guitar. So that's the other part of it where I was like, there's no real character here. They all play air guitar. Does every person on this island like air guitar? What is that about? But so that's what I mean by this. So the downside of the game is that. But it does race well as a kart racer. I had fun with the tracks. There were a few lame-os and some great ones, too. Just like any other kart racer, you know? So... But I would say I had fun playing with the game. It's just I might want to turn those voices down going forward when I'm not reviewing it and just play it for the purpose of it being a kart game.
No.
So probably should do the roundup because I'm like, also there's like 24 tracks.
I was going to actually jump in. I picked this game on Xbox because I'm dying for a new kart racer and I put some time into it. I thought it was really cute, really charming. I wish the music felt more impactful. It just felt like a song would play and it didn't really fit some of the tracks. It was just, I don't know. The music didn't really do it for me in this game, but it was a beautiful game on Xbox. It was absolutely stunning to look at. Bright, colorful, gorgeous.
I guess that's a good thing to put it. I didn't even think about that. The characters, I wasn't too big on their models and stuff, but the actual courses looked really nice.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with you there. The music, I agree that it didn't fit the levels, but it didn't sound bad. Like it wasn't offensive to the ears, and there were a few times where I was actually humming the track as I played the course. Would I listen to it in my car outside of the game? Probably not, but in the game, I'm not going to turn it down. No. It's good. It fits the game and it works.
I mean, I don't think any of the songs were outright bad. They just didn't really, do it for me in terms of a kart racer. Some of them just felt too slow, too, I don't know. It didn't have enough oomph behind them.
Oh, I definitely understand. Like, it's very like ukuleles were playing. You're like, I need some pulse. I need to get my pulse pumping. I'm racing here. I'm throwing tornadoes at cats. And it's like,
nuts up, baby.
Nuts up. Nuts up. I'm going to bowl you over. Oh, my God. We got to get a kart game, man. We got to get one. It needs to happen yesterday.
I'll talk to some friends.
Yes. Get the horn out. We got to bowl them over. Got to bowl them all over.
Nuts up.
Nuts up.
But $40 on All-Star Fruit Racing. What do you think of it?
I would say on the Xbox One, I would actually kind of call it a buy because it's a good racing game. And the Xbox One doesn't have too many kart races I can think of. So I think if you wanted a kart racer, you had your friends over, you would enjoy this. It's a fun run. The Switch version is more of a try it because I can't put it over Mario Kart. I just can't. But if you have Mario Kart and you've played it to death and you want another kart racing game, or if you haven't played it to death but you want some variety in your household, you can grab this guy too. PS4, I think they're probably in the same boat because I can't think of too many kart racers on that system either. I think it and Xbox are looking at like backwards compatibility for some of theirs. Like, for example, I would outright say for sure, if you haven't played Sonic and Sega All-Star Racing Transformed, you need to get on that.
Yeah, that's playable on Xbox One, at least. PlayStation doesn't have any kind of backward compatibility.
And to put in perspective how much I love that game, I liked it more than Mario Kart 7, which is what its competition was back when it came out.
Them's is fighting words.
Damn right. And to be more blunt, until Mario Kart Deluxe came out, I liked it more than that, too.
Wow.
I love Superdome Sonic and Sega All-Star Racing very much.
Well, good to hear that you enjoyed All-Star Fruit Racing as well, because I dug it.
I did. It was fun. I see myself playing more of it, too. This isn't a review and done game.
Well, if you end up grabbing it on Xbox as well in the future, we'll have to have a couple of races.
I can dig that, friend.
But next game to talk about... Oh, what was that?
I just had to throw my line there one last time.
Go ahead. What was it?
I was going to bowl you over.
Nuts up, baby. Nuts up.
Nuts up.
What the hell is nuts up? Like, where did that come from? I'm so enthralled by that saying now.
I just made it up. It just felt like the thing to say.
You're amazing, Purnell.
That's how I feel like I would do it. If they were to bring me into a studio and say, hey, Purnell, we need you to record some lines for a new character. I'm just going to come up with random junk. Whatever they tell me the mood needs to be, I'm going to just throw some randomness out there and hope it sticks. And it will be lovely.
Nuts up. That's amazing. That needs to be in a game yesterday. But next game to talk about is called Nogalius, developed and published by Luigo Luthribo Studios. It is a crazy studio name. If you look in the show notes, you'll see what the hell I'm dealing with. But released August 8th on Steam for $9.99, Nogalius is a retro-style action platformer that pays homage to the era of classic 2D platforming on 8-bit personal computers. Explore 5 different worlds and go through cozy dungeons in the first title of a trilogy that tells the story of Nogalius, his daughter Marriott, and the evil Dorama. Purnell, tell us about this one.
Well, I will say right off the bat, that does a really good job of emulating PC gameplay because my controller wouldn't work. So there's a start. I had to use a keyboard, something I haven't used to play a game since Mega Man X on the old PC back in the day. But this game is basically a 2D platformer with the goal being to progress through a series of 5 worlds, so to speak. And the worlds consist of a number of like 5 stages or something, but that would be not doing a good service to what this game actually is. Each world is actually like a pocket level or pocket adventure stage. So the first world is pretty straightforward. It's almost like a tutorial where you're going from left to right. And in each section, the goal is to find a key to unlock the next section. But once you go beyond that, levels go up, down, all around. You are pretty much climbing vines. You're going underground. You are not swimming because you will drown if you do that. And fighting monsters using a variety of weapons you may find in your adventure. As you progress through levels, you start with absolutely nothing, but you get weapons that you can find on the ground, such as a boomerang, a sword, or an arrow. When you get these different weapons, you can switch between them using 2 buttons, one to go left and one to go right. And when you use the weapon, it has limited uses, but I haven't figured out whether it's just limited uses or if some enemies can break them. But I've had moments where I'll be fighting a boss and it's like, throw my boomerang and it's just using it and it just disappears. So I'm guessing maybe limited uses on your stuff. But you basically find weapons, use them, and progress by solving different puzzles in different areas in order to move on. So like I said, at one point, you were climbing vines to find keys to access new areas. But then in other levels, you might have to find a switch to make a door move open or make a pool of liquid drain out, so that you can progress across the stage that way too. You have very limited actions for the most part, though. You can walk, you can jump, which annoyingly enough is the up button. So enjoy jumping and climbing vines with up. At one point, I actually configured the controls so that the up button was the letter button, which was great for platforming, but when I had to platform into something I had to also scale or climb, forget about it. My brain stopped working. So I couldn't find a one-stop shop solution. So I'm going to outright advise just to say leave up as up and just get used to the fact that you're jumping and climbing with the up button. But also, you also find like various magic stones on different levels. And depending on the circumstances, they unlock, like they might be like a key to unlock a different section. Or sometimes it might be a means of getting a reward from like an old man or a helpful NPC. Like say, hey, thanks for finding these magic stones, chump. And reward for that, here's some goods. Like a shield or, I don't know, like a key to a chest. But for the most part, it's an enjoyable game. My only gripes, though, that I came across is that, which may also go with the fact that it's meant to replicate like an old PC or MSX game. So these might be more so, you know, complaints of the time. But when you're fighting enemies sometimes, mostly enemies with life bars, you find yourself needing to get really close if you're using something melee-based like the sword. But the downside to that is that enemies kind of have weird movement patterns, if that makes sense. Like, they're positioning on the screen when they move. So, like, the first boss, this is spoilers, but it's just one boss, whatever. So the first boss of the game is like this large, hulking, crawling guy. And the way you hurt him is you have to kind of jump with the sword because you're going to lose your boomerang like I did every freaking time. You got to jump with your sword and stab him in the face. Now, when you stab him, he doesn't move back. So you have to stab him and then kind of land on the ground and then run away. The problem there is that one of his attacks is to drop enemies out of his mouth and they can attack you. So if you're jumping the strike at his head, it is very likely that you're going to be landing on top of an enemy that he just spawned while you were in the air. And you can get out of the way, but it's really freaking hard to do so. So you're going to find yourself in situations regularly where you're fighting this guy or fighting other enemies for that matter, and you're misjudging the hitbox, and you're going to stab a freaking bird out of the sky, and you die after you kill the bird because you just suck at timing jumps and strikes. Or maybe you're great at it and you just didn't do it right, period. I can't explain it, but the point is, it will frustrate you. But that aside, I actually enjoyed this game quite a bit. I enjoyed what I was playing. I liked the retro atmosphere behind it. I like exploring the different levels and trying to like figure out what is the puzzle for this world to get onto the next stage. Bosses can kiss my ass, but everything else was a great time. And honestly, well, I should not talk more until you give me some questions or the verdict.
Well, $10 then. What do you think?
I think if you're a man of the retro flavor, this is worth your money. Just take the Nox with it. Hopefully this no good Gladius company or whatever, the new Galugo, decides to come up with some decent controller support. Because I feel that would go make a world of difference on playing the game well. But I think it's worth it. I had fun with it.
Nice. This company name just boggles me. Luigo Luthribo. It's Luigolu, the number 3BO.
And I think there's like translation issues sometimes too. But thankfully, I didn't notice any where it counted. But I remember when you die, they actually do keep track of your score as you play, and when you die, there's a high score list, and if you input your name, it was like, score name and aficionado'd or something. Like, what? Aficionado'd? Oh, Loogie Lugo, you crazy kids.
Part of me wonders if this is a company that's just like, you know what, let's make the weirdest names possible, and we'll listen to reviewers try to say them, and then we'll laugh at them.
Luego, Luego. There we go. That's my last attempt at it. Luego, Luego. I bet
that works.
I got it.
That
works. Hopefully, if they check up on Twitter, they can respond like, you know, I think that guy nailed it. Aficionado!
Oh, man. You got one more game to talk about. That is called Manual Samuel, developed by Perfectly Paranormal, published by Curve Digital. This one released August 16th on the Switch for $9.99. Meet Samuel. He's handsome, wealthy, and most importantly, dead. A deal with death gives Samuel one last chance to live again if he can survive a whole day doing everything manually. Pernell, we covered this one before, but now it's out on the Switch, and I gotta know, what did you think of this one?
Well, I'm gonna explain the game, but I think I might be jumping a little bit ahead with my introductory statement here. So, we live in an age nowadays where everybody wants more bang for their buck, you know? If I pay $10 for a game or $20 for a game, I want at least $5 to $1 or 2 hours for a dollar. And if I don't get that, then it wasn't worth my money. That's the usual jargon that people throw around there. However, I think a lot of people have kind of forgotten also that going to the movies costs you about $15 unless you go on $5 Tuesdays. And no one really bats an eye dropping $10 for popcorn and a soda at the teller. But they go to the movies and enjoy themselves. Why should video games have a stigma that says that short can't be great?
And I'm here to tell- I mean, I just literally today I bought Deadpool 2 on 4K Blu-ray for $35. That's a 2 hour movie for $35.
Exactly. But no one balks at that. And they, and you might ask them why. They're going to be like, well, because it's a movie or some nonsense. Like, well, it's got bonus features. Like, you're not going to watch those. How often do you watch the bonus features on a disc? No one does that. It's just flavor that doesn't get used. And it's amazing because we all use it as incentive to buy stuff. And we never use the bonus features ever.
I'll watch a good gag reel. Don't get me wrong. I'll watch a good gag reel.
Yeah, like the deleted scenes, that's one thing, or a gag reel, but things like the featurettes, the making of Deadpool 2, or I don't know, like some random thing, like here's a 3D image of the studio we worked in. No one uses that shit. It's just printed on the back of the box to make people think they're getting a value, but they're not using the value. Anyway, I digress. The point is, this game is short, but it's fucking awesome. There it is. Boom, I said. So basically, you described the plot. The main character is a spoiled douche, and at the very beginning of the game, he gets his ass rocked and he dies, goes to hell. And Death says, hey, I got a deal for you, bro. Go back to life, but I'm going to make a deal. You got to do something at my choosing and survive for 24 hours. And that thing is live your life manually. Now, it's funny when you think about it because at the end of the day, you're not truly manual in this game, but by that same token, I don't think it could possibly be done in a truly manual way. There's not enough buttons on the controller for that.
Yeah.
But what they do is really cool. You have to keep things that you would picture as being really simple and everyday normal functions are actually a challenging chore in this game. So Samuel, in order to breathe, has to have buttons pressed in order to breathe in and then breathe out. If you want to walk, you got to move left foot, right foot. And if you screw it up, you do the splits. And every time you do that, the narrator tends to have something funny to say to go along with the fact that you screwed up. This game starts out, who am I kidding? It doesn't even start out simple. It starts out pretty much hit these buttons, though it does lean you into them by saying, hit this button to do this. Hit this button to blink, because if you don't blink, the screen will get all fuzzy and blurry. I better point out before I get too far into this, though, you can't die. You can do poorly, but you, from what I can tell, at least, you can't die. So I've seen people make comments about, you know, when I was looking at the original version of the game, because fun fact, I've never played this part of this version, but I didn't read about it beforehand before I even got this review. And I remember a lot of people saying this game is too frustrating and frantic or whatever. And my philosophy there is, again, you can't die. And they go out of their way to make every incident funny. And it's not bad funny. It's actually fun humor that makes you laugh. So doing something as simple as taking a leak in the toilet requires you to keep your posture and also get button presses inside of a spot so that the urine goes into the bowl. And there's an in-game system achievement for pissing in the bowl. It's genius. You fall down the stairs. There's humorous things based around that. Oh, you can't even walk down the stairs properly. And let me tell you something. Walking down the stairs while going left, right with your legs and blinking and keeping your posture and breathing properly is a hilarious act and frustration fun. Yes, those two words go together. Frustration fun. And it's just a simple day in this guy's life, though it does quickly kind of go out of whack and weird things start happening. And he has to navigate the whole time with Death constantly parading behind him and with him trying to do kickflips on a skateboard, which is kind of funny, too. There's a cool little side cast of characters that pops up here and there, like either just basically to move the story along. But I just like Death's banter as you sit there trying to do simple tasks like drive a car or do your job. Or brush your teeth. I think maybe I'm missing a component to the description, but at the end of the day, you're controlling this poor sucker through his life by doing all of his bodily functions for him. Walking, moving his arms, getting dressed, brushing his teeth, everything. There's buttons related to it. Either it's you know, timing button presses or doing like, again, left right functions or, you know, hitting the, oh, I got to mention this though. For all the things they make you do, I still feel like the driving section is the most bizarre because I honestly kind of found the driving section about as rough as it feels to learn how to drive an actual car. As far as keeping all the buttons in my head, it's like, okay, move your hand down to the clutch, or hit, move your hand down to the gas, then hit the clutch, then move your foot over, and then let off, and then you accelerate. Like, God damn it, no! That's why I drive an automatic in real life. I can't do this, man. I can't. I did do it, but it was nutty. Again, the game is not very long. You can probably get through the game in 1 to 2 sittings because, again, you'll probably be laughing at it so much you're not going to want to stop playing it. But there are little small things afterwards if you want to bother. Like you can go back to chapter select and do levels over again if you want to go for all the extra, you know, in-game achievements for it or whatever. Or there's a co-op mode where you can, where two players can kind of share the load of controlling Samuel across two Joy-Cons. Nice dating game.
Oh, you Lord.
Show your lover how much you care by helping a man to blink. In addition to that, there's also like unlockable comics that you can look through as you play through the game and just general fun. Oh, and there's a time attack mode, but I can't honestly see myself bothering with that. I think once I'm done, I'm not going to want to go through and see how fast I can get through the bathroom scenario. It just is. I did it once. That's enough. But with that said, this game is very short, but very fun. It's a game that makes you laugh. I think I brought this up back when I did my review for West of Loathing ages ago, but it is very rare when a game bases a lot of its gameplay on laughter and the laughs actually work.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen very often. West of Loathing did it. As far as this show goes, West of Loathing did it for me, and now Manuel Samuel has done it. I actually would laugh out loud, audibly, at the jokes in this game. To me, that and the experience is, oh, I'm jumping ahead here, but I'm doing it anyway.
Well, $10. What do you think? Go ahead.
This is worth your damn money. It is a lot of fun. You will not regret the time spent playing it. And seriously, just don't go to the movies one night or just don't eat at one McDonald's. Because, oh, my God, McDonald's meals cost almost $10 now. McDonald's meals. What world is this?
Yeah, it's getting crazy out there.
Getting real crazy, and they sit there and tell you, no, whoa, you understand, now it's this buttermilk chicken. Like, what the fuck's that? No, it's not. It's not buttermilk chicken. This is grade A Angus meat. No, it's not. And who's Angus? Why am I eating Angus? He wasn't even a bad food, I think. You just got people chewing on Angus to justify $10 value meals. This is ridiculous. Point is, you can sacrifice a small knuckle to have this nice, fun experience. Call it going to the movies for one night.
I agree. This game is ridiculous, and I am so happy that I was able to expose you to Manuel Samuel.
Thank you, because I'm going to tell you right now, if I didn't, this is one of those games where I would see it and I would ignore it because the art style didn't intrigue me. It just didn't. But playing the game, the art style worked, the humor worked, the gameplay worked. The only reason I'm not sad about having waited this long is because I got to experience it for the show.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
You're welcome, Purnell. Oh, Purnell, it is always good and it is always insane having you on the show. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
I'm pretty good. Just be mindful of this water because I think the rain has just slowed down, but by the same token, I think it might just be waiting for me for it to drop our guard and it's going to just deluge again. And it'll be disgusting. Ugh.
All right, next game to talk about is called Tiny Hands Adventure, developed and published by Blue Sunset Games. It released August 10th on the Switch and Steam for $16.99. Join young T-Rex Bordy on his quest to find the best replacement for his tiny hands and arms. Explore several unknown worlds, find all the collectibles, and face bosses that have what you want. The adventure starts now. Going on this magical adventure, Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm awake. That is
progress.
That's more than I can say for before this or after it. And I got my cat here. Yeah, got Wilfred here being a nuisance. So yeah, just played Tiny Hands Adventure on the Switch, and this is a pretty good one. I So what we have here is a 3D platformer, very much informed, I would say, by like the mid-90s sort of old school and stuff. Yes, you play as Bordy, who is a blue T-Rex who, for reasons unknown, has thick eyebrows and a trucker hat. And and he wants to be a goalie in his soccer team, but to be a goalie, you can't just kick, you also have to catch. And so with his minuscule appendages, the job is too much for him. So he seeks out a magical fairy. Fairy is in hand quotes because this fairy looks a lot more like a standard kind of witch or witchy cosplay. And but either way, she promises you the tools to get the job done, literally the tools, if you go to different worlds and find them and defeat elemental bosses. So then the actual, after a brief tutorial level, you basically choose which stage you want to go through, and you can play them in any order. The whole idea is to get, well, funny enough, because he's a dinosaur, he doesn't know what a jewel or anything like that is. So they're just called shiny objects. And if you get four of the correct shape and color of shiny object, one in each stage, of course, you can then challenge the boss for one of the tools that will eventually give you what the arms that you've been dreaming of. So basically, like the couple of points, like as far as the actual platforming goes, it moves pretty well. Like I did notice the tutorial stage was like chugging at like 30 frames a second, and I was like, oh no, it's one of these. And but then after the tutorial level, and actually as I got into like the actual stages in the game, it kind of straightened itself back out. And when I looked at a video of somebody running this on Steam, it didn't have that problem. So I just wondered if it was something about the Switch port or something, or just, I don't know. But it fixes itself eventually, runs pretty smooth. Yeah, I was worried at first, though. So yeah, the action is smooth. Tends to be, like, I got the distinct impression as soon as I started playing this game, I was like, oh, this is a European game. And just before we went live, I looked up the company, Blue Sunsoft Games. Turns out, yes, Gdansk, Poland is where they're from. And I don't know that I've dealt with a Polish developer before. But it has a lot of the mainstays of classic, like, European platforming. And that is to say, it's very hard. The controls feel a little fluid. That is to say, you'll overcorrect on a lot of jumps. There's a lack of like this sort of tightness, but that's always been Europe's jam. And the soundtrack is incredible to the point where it feels like it shouldn't be in this game. It's very like it's heavy synthy. Like there's some funk. There's some very what's the wub one. Dubstep. There's a very dubstep sounding stuff in here. There's some straight up rock and roll. And like the boss theme, once you actually get to the boss, is like, I really like that song and I want to seek it out. It's so good. So I was impressed by that. The difficulty of it is kind of like, I wouldn't say that the game is especially hard. It's more like you just have to get used to the controls and, you know, kind of play it the way they want you to play it, because like part of the adventure involves busting up boxes, which if you jump on top of them or use your attack move, then the boxes bust and you might get a piece of meat or meat shaped gum. It's kind of hard to tell. It's very shiny meat, so it looks like it's candy like. But so the attack busts the boxes. The attacks also take care of the enemies, which are gigantic insects for the most part, and also, I guess, somewhat less gigantic crabs. But the other thing is that sometimes the boxes will have explosions in them. And, of course, one hit kills your little dinosaur friend. And so sometimes you'll jump onto a platform where you will have to attack in order to get the enemy that's there, because if you just stand there, then the enemy will get you, even if it's just kind of looking at you. And or maybe you have to clear some boxes, and then just one of them will be an exploding box. So you have to figure out how to bust some of the boxes, not all the boxes, and you have to basically decide all this mid-jump.
Fun.
Yeah. But the cool thing is that the levels are replete with many checkpoints, at least in the early stages I played. And the other thing is that once, if you've exploded a box and died as a result, when you start your next life, that box isn't there until you lose all your lives and get a game over, and then you just have to start the stage over, which is fair. It's fair enough. You get about four lives, I think. So, and you get extra lives along the way. So, yeah, the other thing that I really like about this game is that the levels are very interesting. I will say, I was reminded of many, many years ago when a friend of mine told me about Zool, the ninja from the Nth Dimension on the Super Nintendo.
I remember that game.
Yeah. He was like, it's not a good game, and here's why. The first level is the ice level.
Oh, and no.
The first level in Tiny Hands is the ice level.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I'm not saying that it's a bad game because of that. I'm just saying that it failed the Zool, the ninja from the Nth Dimension rule. Let's just call it the Nth Dimension rule.
It was perfectly set up for the Zool rule.
Yeah, exactly. Never start with the ice level, yo. The other levels are much better. And of course, this is only going from left to right. You can choose any stage. So it just so happened that I chose the one that looked like it was the first because it was on the farthest left. But anyway, that did put me in the ice level, which I did beat. So it's not too bad. Oh, and the other thing, and this is probably my favorite thing, every level has different sort of branch offs and sort of looks like other rewards that you can get once you defeat the boss and get the tool to come back. So the first tool that you get is the drill, and there are several parts in the other stages that say come back when you have the drill. So it has that that replayability of the levels that kind of opens them up a little bit. So I like that.
Nice.
Yeah. So there's a lot to like, a little bit to dislike. I think overall it's good.
Well, overall, $17. What do you think?
Well, $17 is a tall order, but it's a fully 3D platformer. Those aren't cheap to make. So, and plus, it's coming from, you know, Poland, where you want to support gaming from Poland because we want to see more Polish games. And it looks like they actually have a list on their website for some stuff. But yeah, no, I think that I would say for most general audiences, it's a try it. I would say if you have a younger gamer who's pretty skilled, if you just want to check it out and see the weird ass fourth level in that first set of levels, the third level. I'm sorry. It's called Alien Stairway to Heaven.
Interesting.
Makes no sense, and the stage doesn't make any sense. It is a giant stairway. Your main enemy in it is going to be disembodied kitten paws that are bright rainbow-colored that are going to be swiping at you. I'm telling you, this game has some really interesting stages that aren't all made of ice.
I might have to check it out for the floating kitten paws.
Yeah, you see, there's plenty here to recommend. $17, I would say, just know that you're getting into a platformer that might be a bit frustrating, but I think ultimately these guys have made a really interesting game, and I think it deserves some attention.
Awesome. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Final game to talk about tonight is called Roboto, developed and published by JMJ Interactive. It released August 16th on Switch and Steam for $9.99. Join Rob and Otto, two intrepid maintenance robots, as they must travel through a malfunctioning space cruiser in an effort to shut down all the machines rampaging through the ship. Chris, what is Roboto?
Roboto. There's a real simple, sound clip size way of describing Roboto. It is Bubble Bobble in the future.
Interesting.
This game is a lot like the classic arcade game Bubble Bobble, which is a game that has always been pretty prominent in my life. So I definitely was into it immediately. So the way it's set up is that you go through these little stages. They're all one screen size. So, you know, set up in the arcade style that way. It's a platformer where you are a little robot on treads, and you have two weapons at your disposal, at least initially. I mean, they never introduced anything after a dozen levels for me. But one of them is the Y button shoots out a little electric shock, and you've got these other little, you know, washing machine-shaped robots, like, walking around and stuff. And that electric shock incapacitates them for a second. It kind of slows them down. And then with your X button, you have this little, like, just a, you know, kind of spritzy water hose sort of attachment goes out a few feet in front of you. It's not like a high-powered water jet or anything. But if you walk close enough to the enemy and water them with that little hose, then they break down. And the key is to break down all of the enemies, whereupon they drop their bonus fruits, I mean circuits or something, and you gather them up and move on to the next level. Obviously, the appeal here is that the levels get more and more involved, like they get more and more complex, and the enemies, of course, get more vicious and dangerous. They introduce a lot more of them. The thing that mostly makes this like Bubble Bobble, besides that, you know, the basic aspect of the gameplay, is also that if there's a hole in the ground and you drop through you drop down into the hole, you will then drop through the ceiling. So it's one of those where the whole stage is a wraparound.
Nice.
So if you exit the right side of the screen, you will come back out through the left side of the screen. And so that becomes a big part of the strategy, which, of course, I enjoyed because that is exactly this classic arcade game that I grew up with. Also, like Bubble Bobble, it's two-player. I don't know if the two players are required to get the real ending. I think they might have done away with that by now. But you can play two-player co-op, which is really cool. I think that this is definitely a cool game to play. Like, if you're, especially if you're like out and about with your Switch and you run into somebody you know or whatever, and you want to play a game, like, this is a great one to throw up the kickstand and take off the Joy-Cons and start playing, because it's a game that doesn't demand a whole lot of button mashing, and it's so, everything's so prominent and clear on the screen, it really works on the tiny screen, which I'm starting to notice more, so that some Switch games don't look so good on the tiny screen in portable mode, but they work perfectly well on the big screen, and then some are the opposite. So, I mean, this one works both ways, but that's how I imagined it having the broadest appeal. Soundtrack is pretty good. It's kind of spacey and synthy, of course, like any robot game should be. There's no persistent polka that's playing like in Bubble Bobble. Oh yes, I know that theme so well by now, because we cover it in Gimmick. It ends our shows.
I was just gonna say, Gimmick covers it, don't they?
Yeah, we do. Actually, we covered it recently with the guitarist from the Returners who played trombone, like his beat up high school trombone. We didn't even know he could play.
That's incredible.
So, yeah. Anyway, though, so this game, I obviously recommend it based on its proximity to Bubble Bobble alone, but I also think that it works really well as a you know, kind of an arcade platformer that's not. I mean, I breezed through like 10 levels initially, and it did get harder, but I kept finding myself able to like keep up with the challenges. So I think this is a great one to like sit down and like, you know, play through a dozen levels, and the levels do get pretty interesting. And there are boss battles, so that's really nice.
Always good.
You kind of have to use what you've learned to deal with bosses that are, you know, involve like moving platforms, manipulating the background, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Well, $10 on this one. What's your official verdict?
$10. Yeah. I'd say there's plenty here to be broadly appealing to just about anybody who can look at it and be like, oh yeah, I could play this.
Sounds
and
good.
$10, always a fair price for, you know, an indie game. And I don't know if you're supporting Poland if you buy this one, but
I'm not sure where JMJ Interactive is located.
Yeah, but, you know, both of these games would make for a very good weekend.
Now I want to look up where JMJ Interactive is from.
All right, do it. Do it.
Let's see. What does Google tell me? Gothenburg. Is that Sweden?
Is it? Swedish game.
Is that where Gothenburg is?
I don't know. Google Gothenburg.
Gothenburg. Search Google for Gothenburg. Yeah, Sweden. So you're going with Sweden with this one.
Ah, so it's the Swedes versus the Poles. Wow.
Fight to the death, round one.
That's such a funny thing to say about Sweden and Poland. I think they're more gonna cooperate and then end up conquering you.
Probably.
Yeah,
then,
yeah.
Then again, conquering this show wouldn't be a very tall order.
Oh dear.
I give up fairly easily.
They have the best chefs.
On that note, Chris, always good having you on. That is it for this episode. Thanks again to everyone else who came on and did their reviews. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
Don't make your first level an ice level. Just don't.
That's good advice for every game developer ever.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.